they are a little bit harder to see than some of the other things, but you sent me that video of Muhammad pretending like he was sleeping, or at least like kind of going in and out of consciousness, and then he kind of scared his buddy Ed Bradley. I think that was another 60 minutes, so that's back-to-back episodes that we're talking about 60 minutes at the beginning. Bro, this is a trend. What's up? What's up with Dave?
What's up, man? What's up? No, that Muhammad Ali glove behind me, I got from my brother Mark, who actually I think we use for boxing. Mark, I mean,
no. I know you say that sometimes. Okay. Here's how I know the truth. Because the boxing gloves that we used to box with, I went and bought at Walmart with them. I remember.
Well, these are heavy boxing gloves anyway, so I'm glad we didn't use them.
Did you see that little video I sent you of Malik Andrews and her sister Kendra?
Oh yeah.
And
is that my watch? This.
Yeah, I didn't know that Kendra works for the Warriors, but that's Malika's sister. And
that's great.
Exactly. On air, ESPN. Malika's like, "Is that my watch?" And she's like, "What? How would I get your watch?" Which was a perfect denial, because she did not deny it. She just denied the opportunity to get it. And then it's like, well, I guess that's a different question, isn't it? But it's not whether or not it's her watch. So
that's hilarious.
I was thinking about it. I was like, all right, we're brothers. And the last time we hung out, like, you handed me back a sweater that you had taken from me, I guess. I didn't even know it was mine. I thought it was yours. But
which one was it?
The Adirondacks.
Adirondacks. Yeah.
It was, I think you took it from me when I was in high school. So yeah, 20 years ago.
Sup, 20
punk? Years ago, bro, you took this shirt from me and you gave it back. So I was just wondering, like, brother to brother, with just Unc here with us.
Yeah.
Do you have anything else of mine that you still have that you want to give back? Or, well, if you don't want to tell me, do you have anything of John's that we should tell John right now in a confessional?
All right. So John's favorite blazer that he ever had, that corduroy blazer, you know, I still feel bad about that. Mm-hmm. I wore out, and the reason that was a big deal was I just got out of basic training and dropped like 40 pounds at basic, and I fit into my baby brother John's stuff, which is like the first time ever. So I was going on a big night, and I put John's jacket on and put it in the back of my car, which you know what the back of my car looks like. And I could never find it because 2 weeks later, I get in a car wreck. And I totaled my car.
It got lost beneath the trash.
And then I never told John. John's like, "Hey, do you ever see my my corduroy jacket?" I'm like, "No." But I knew where it was at. I just could never admit to taking it because I never had the money to pay him back. So, John, I'll buy you another corduroy jacket. As far as your shit, I mean, besides taking all your socks and all your underwear before you left the house,
I gotta tell a good one of John's here. Since we're confessing what we stole from John at this moment,
thou shalt confess thy sins and arrogance.
All right, so when John was in Afghanistan, I used to use his truck.
Oh yeah,
the Isuzu, the silver pickup, and I wanted to go fishing in Arkansas.
Yeah,
on the White River, so I went, and halfway the clutch went out. So I was like, fuck it, I'll just push start it. And I just decided to finish the trip, push starting the truck. Eventually, after I pretty much fucked it up doing that the whole way, I got home just in time, and the engine started smoking because I didn't put any coolant in it. So when he came back from Afghanistan, I had completely destroyed his truck, like, in every way, like, destroyed the engine and the clutch. There wasn't much left of that truck that was working, so.
You did him a favor, though, let's be honest.
I mean, dude, I slept in that Isuzu in the front seat of it. It was really small, but I really enjoyed fishing. One night, dude, I was, like sitting in a campsite, middle of the night, sleeping in this truck upright, and all of a sudden, a bunch of, like, a raccoon fell from the tree into the bed of the truck, dude.
Scary bears.
The nails of the raccoon started scratching on the truck and freaking out. And I was like, "What?" And dude, I like almost shit myself. Man, that was one of the closest, scariest I've ever been.
The scariest I've ever been camping, man, was up in Colorado. There's this place up in the Netherlands. If you guys know where I'm talking about, Colorado people.
Yeah, it's with a D. It's Netherlands.
Netherlands. Yeah. I'm sorry. My bad. I always get that mixed up. But anyways, you go about 10 miles past that up in the mountains, you get to this campsite that's pretty isolated. And if you follow that campsite all the way back and to the left, there's this super amazing, hard to get to campsite that I would always go to. The problem is they're full of, like, these little bears that people call raccoons, but they're fucking torment people, all right? So one night, I just keep on hearing scratches on my tent. Okay, I may have been taking some things that will make
inhibited
things
your ability
crazy.
To tell what was really happening.
But all I keep on seeing is these little paws and scratching on my tent walls, bro. And I've never been so scared in my life because I was like, what the fuck? These little, like, they look like little bears. You know, so like,
Carson,
you see them. Anyways, yeah, next thing you know is I'm literally in my car trying to fall asleep because I was just like, I'm not going to do this. Next morning, I wake up and I just found, like, raccoon turds everywhere around my tent. And it was like, okay, I'm going to go ahead and move. But if you want isolation, that's the place to go, guys.
Dude, I love it up in Colorado, up in the mountains, man. Good times, good fun.
Dude, it's definitely just great. It's just free camping, and it's just nice. Like, there's, I don't know, very few things in my life that I've ever enjoyed as much as getting up into the mountains of Colorado and camping and taking the canoe and just enjoying the nature up there because, I mean, fucking mountains, baby.
Fucking mountains, baby. All right, Carson.
Oh, yes. Let's talk about Shea, brah.
We need to talk about Shea. We need to talk about this all-NBA first team, second team. We also need to talk about what's going on with the playoffs. So just before we talk about Shea's all-NBA first team and talk about the votes, I wanted to mention to you something we saw last night.
Yes.
After the game, Jalen Brunson walking off the court, John Stark stops him, and they give, like, the longest hug ever.
Do you know why?
Why?
Because Brunson, as a kid, used to watch John Starks because his dad played on that team.
He had to
so
be sure.
So they had this relationship that's very unique and very special already. So the fact is that John Starks knows what it takes to, you know, put New York City on his back and pull them out of the gutter, you know? And that's exactly what Brunson just did. Gave it life. And, you know, if you're a New York fan by nature of the game, then you know exactly the heartbreak it's consistently had. So the fact is that if you're looking at this year, it's already a success, massive success. As a organization with all the young talent that you have, can you continue to build off of that? Can you continue to get better? And I think the answer is yes.
I think they have hope because they have a new general manager in Leon Rose, or at least, you know, relatively new. So this is his first really deep run, first opportunity to prove the depth of the team, and I think he's done a good job building it. It surprised me, but I also think if they had lost that game, then let's face it, it would be all bad. They needed that win in Madison Square Garden for game 5. They needed to make it a little bit more of a series. Jalen Brunson played 48 minutes, and
he's brilliant.
It was, and it's going to be like, you, if you do that in game 5, you're doing that in game 6, you're doing game that 7. In game 7. Like, this is going to be incredibly difficult for him, but
dude, some guys got it though, man.
Okay, fine, some guys got it, and that's what
but,
you saw.
But look,
like,
at what he did with the Mavericks. You know, like, sometimes Luka and especially in the playoffs wouldn't come up, and you see Brunson just like flex. Like, that was the moment I realized that, like, whoever got Brunson was getting a deal. It didn't matter how much you paid for Brunson, you're gonna get a deal because he deserves a ton of respect. And the way that he was, you know, proving with the Mavericks, it was crazy. And the fact that the Mavericks let him go to free agency shows you where the mental aspect for the Mavericks GMs are. There's no way you should ever let a guy go to like Brunson. You should have signed him for $55, $85 million the year before. Yeah, you know what? You wanted to see if you could get a deal. But in that, you fucked over your chances for Luka to ever have a team around him that's going to be able to win a Western Conference final game.
Yeah, Brunson's really good. The fact that he lives in the paint is something that really, you know, says something about his, you know, his game. So, I mean, I was really impressed. And that moment, like I said, I don't know if I've ever seen anything like it. A former player just, like, embracing someone. And I felt like I could hear what John Starks was saying to him, which was, one more game. Bring it back here for 7, and we'll carry you the rest of the way. Bring it back for 7. Bring it back for 7. One more game. One more fucking game. And like I've said before, I'm not a Knicks fan, but growing up a John Starks fan, a Knicks fan, like, I've let all that go, but it's like really hard not to be a fan of the moment. Like, I don't want to see the Heat win, mostly because I have bitterness toward the Heat for beating us in the finals. Like, I still look at that. I'm like, whatever. They're a good team. I respect the hell out of them. I look at them a little bit like the Spurs. I respected them, but I don't want them to win. The Knicks, yeah. Man, like, you got to love seeing the energy in the Garden. Do you think the Heat closed it out game six in Miami?
Man, I don't know. Before I get into will the Heat win, let me just tell you my favorite John Stark story. So it was 2001, I believe. 2002. Anyways, my team was playing against John Stark's son's team, Victory Christian.
Tulsa.
His son was a sophomore on the JV team. And my brother John, who idolized John Starks completely, had torn his ACL the week before and wasn't able to play in the game that John Starks' sons. And he's been literally circling his entire career, that entire season. I'm going to play against John Starks. I'm going to see him in the stands because he goes to the games.
His name is John Starks Jr., right?
Yeah, so he knew it immediately. Like, he was so amped. Anyway, so all these kids are walking up to John Starks and asking him for an autograph. And he keeps on saying no and no and no during the game. And I walked up and sat, you know, by him and said, hello, Mr. Starks. I'm Dave. My brother John tore his ACL. He would have been playing against your son tonight, but last week he tore his ACL and is not able to play. Do you mind, like, just signing this or, you know, giving a note of encouragement or something like that? And he gave him a note of encouragement, you know, like, hey, man, you can do this. Keep on pulling through. It's only an injury. Life goes on. You'll be all right. Something, you know, crazy like that. And it was impactful because, like, he didn't have to do that. He could have been like, I'm not signing any autographs, you know? I'm here to watch my son. But the reality was he recognized that, you know, that was a bigger moment. And it was just like how John Starks played. It was just like how John Starks did everything in his life. He recognized the moments were bigger and able to step up. Last night was no exception. He recognized that Jalen Brunson needed something.
I know, dude.
And he stepped up yet again. And I love it because it's the big moments like that I love about John Starks. So do you think that...
things I love about basketball, man.
I mean, I don't think the series over by any stretch of the imagination, but I do think that if it gets to Game 7 back in New York, I mean, anything's possible.
How do the Heat stop Jalen Brunson? That's what they're going to come into Game 6
How did the Knicks stop Jimmy Butler? I mean, that's my question because... the only way for the Knicks to win is the Knicks are going to have to stop Jimmy Butler. It doesn't matter about Brunson.
Let's just say neither one of those guys can be stopped. Who wins?
Heat.
To me, I see it differently. If you can't stop Jalen Brunson, the Knicks are going to win. Because
if you can't stop Jimmy Butler, he's going to score 50 or 45 on you, 50 points on you.
I think that the Knicks could still win, even if he scores that many.
Dude, listen. Eventually, they're going to hit a wall because they're just injury prone right now.
And I'm just, to me, Jalen Brunson, the way that he can dominate the pace of a game, I mean, let's just be real, because, like, to me it's very similar to Shea. I would say he's much more polished in the mid-range than what you see from Shea in the possession type game of a playoff type game. Like, he's just had a little bit more experience. Not much. Shea's going to be there in a short time, but his three-point shot gives him that ability to stretch the court and be defended. Like, they have to stretch the defense all the way up beyond the perimeter, and then that way he opens up his mid-range game. He can finish at the basket. So for me, with Jalen Brunson, man, one of the special things about the fact that he left the Mavericks is he was never going to get these moments next to Luka. Like, what you start to see is, like, he's almost like Luka in his ability. Like, he's not going to shoot the, you know, 4 foot behind the arc threes. He's not going to, like, carve you up with the cross court passes, but he controls the pace and he does those things and he scores at the right time. I don't know how you stop him unless you double team him all game. Take the ball out of his hand early and don't let him get it back. And if you do that by putting Jimmy Butler on him for 48 minutes, maybe you wear him down. I don't know.
I think looking at Jalen Brunson and understanding the contract that he got on there is truly spectacular. Because let's just be honest, man. I hate bringing Jordan Poole up again, but think about Jordan Poole. He couldn't be doing what he's doing. He's got $140 million. Can Andrew Wiggins do what Brunson's doing, leading a team like that? Oh, hell no.
And why is it Brunson so disrespected? It's because he's a little short.
But it's the heart, man. That's what's so crazy about this. And this is why I keep going back and forth on this, is that I understand that the NBA is going to be full of these crazy contracts. But as the Oklahoma City Thunder are coming up to contract years, right? Mm-hmm. We have to sit here and we have to stop and pause, because what happens next is going to be key to everything. It just is. Like, how much money are we going to be able to dip into our bank account? How much money are we going to be able to afford in the tax? Just as simple as that. Because if we have a line, right, then we're going to be trading players every year and just turnover, right? Mm-hmm. If we don't have a line and we can go up and spend 200 and something million dollars a season, right, and spend $40-60 million on luxury taxes, right, we keep this team together. I think that's the key. If you look at contracts like Jalen Brunson's, it's the key to bring back everything. If we can get guys on team-friendly contracts because they want to stay, we can do this. If we have to pay guys like Jordan Poole, what are the Golden State Warriors paying for? They're paying for Jordan Poole's ego. That's right it. Now, that's what they're paying for.
We used to call them bench warmers.
And I think that's why we have to consider, when things are coming down with this, is that when favorite players leave this team, and it's going to inevitably happen, how we handle it as fans. Because there's moments that it's going to be like, this doesn't make sense. And we're going to sit here and be like, why did this happen? And then in 5 years, 7 years, 10 years down the road, we're going to all of a sudden look back and be like, that happened because James Harden was actually the most toxic player in the NBA. And when he's told him that he was going to sign him for this much, and he said no, right? It was the indication he was unwilling to be a team player. It was a cause and effect moment. And yeah, that was it. And I think we have to recognize that as this team is continuing to be built, there's going to be moments like that where it'd be like, damn it, we missed out on this player. Well, yeah, because he wasn't right for the team.
Oh, you're absolutely right. But also, like, the moment when we because that was what I believe. But, like, you know, because Bill Simmons and his little minions ran around declaring that to be the worst trade in history, and that being, like, the reason Sam Presti will never win a championship or whatever synopsis they came up with. I kind of stopped saying I think that was a good move until the Rockets came out and they were like, oh yeah, he was a terrible locker room presence. And then immediately after that, you started hearing rumors, not from the Thunder.
The million dollars a year that he spent at the strip clubs.
Right, but you started hearing that he was going out in between the finals games.
What's up, Nicholas? Miami.
He was hanging out with everybody in Miami into like 3, 4, 5 o'clock in the morning, staying out all night, and then going playing in a finals game. As soon as you hear that was happening, but you know what? You didn't hear it from the Thunder camp. You didn't hear it.
No, we kept it in-house.
You didn't hear it for the first, 8-10 years of when it happened. It came from the Rockets, but the Rockets knew it because they had heard the legends of it. And
that's why they're only willing to pay a certain amount for it.
So
for him.
Yeah, and so whatever. Obviously, we feel very strongly about that, but it kind of harkens back to what you were saying a second ago, which is it's really important for us as fans to not try to criticize the decisions of a good team management, right? What you want to do is try to understand them. So we trade away Russ. We trade away Paul George. Those things are hard to understand in the moment, but instead of being like, that was stupid, it's going to be forever till we're good again, you start trying to understand what a new rebuild looks like and what assets we're getting and what good they're going to help us with the future. So that's just our goal. That's how we try to operate things. And it's quite a bit of fun. Now let's talk about the Lakers and the Warriors, bro. Mm. Late game. So I watched the highlights afterwards. I don't know like anybody's scores, like who put up, you know, massive games, but I'll say this, both teams into game five had to win at home to keep those series going. We got what we wanted. We love this second round. It's one of the classic second rounds I can think of.
But, you know, I watched, fast-forwarded through the stupid shit and the Golden State game, but I feel like the Golden State, a lot like the Knicks, put their hearts on the line and their asses on the line, and the question is how much is left in the tank for both teams? And the Golden State Warriors, I know that they're a championship team and championship caliber, and I think that's going to play a part in what happens next for them. I just do. And the reason is because either A, they put it together and they're able to get to the Western Conference Finals, right? You know, whatever. But they just made it to the finals. They've had a hard road so far. I don't think it's going to be as easy as 1-2-3. I don't think it's going to be for the Golden State Warriors just going out there. I think there's a lot of old, tired guys in that locker room. And because of that, I think that this is going to benefit the Lakers at this moment. Yes, the Lakers have the old, tired guys as well. But I don't see that LeBron's last couple of seasons have been very strenuous for him. So he's more ready to go for this moment.
All right. So you think the Lakers will finish it off?
I feel like it. I feel like that's what's going to happen. I mean, it's not like I'm going to be right on that at all, but I think that that's coming to the end.
Speaking of finishing off, dude, do you think the Celtics are done, or do you think they're going to come back?
I've been saying it since the series started, is I felt like the 76ers were going to win. Mm-hmm. I just felt like that. But
so you think they need to get it done at home, or do you think that if they end up going game 7 in Boston, the Sixers can still pull that off?
If you get to game 7 in Boston, I mean, it's going to need a miracle for the 76ers, like a game from Embiid or a game from...
So they need to finish it off in 6.
Yeah, you got to finish it off right now. You're at home. I mean, any of these teams that are going to game 6 right now at home, you got to finish this off. You know, like, this is your opportunity. If you can't finish off, then you just might as well just walk away.
Nuggets Suns, bro.
I just don't think the Suns are done. I just don't. I know Nuggets are playing incredibly amazing.
They
got to
win game 6 at home for the Suns. So, you know, it's going to be fucking crazy there.
Suns are just good, man. I don't think KD's done, and I don't think Booker's done. Weren't they down 3-2 series last year, too?
I don't know, man.
Yeah, they were down 3-2 in the series last year. So this is not uncharted territory for them.
All right. So overall, you still feeling like, who are we going to have for the Western Conference Finals matchup? Call it right now.
Ooh. I want to see what I want or what we're going to see.
What are we
going to
see? What's going to happen?
My gut says Nuggets Lakers. But what I want to see is Suns Lakers.
Suns Lakers. All right. Cool. And Eastern?
76ers. And I think New York still has something left in the tank. But. Let's just cover down and say the Heat have it chopped up in game 6 right now.
Here's what I would say. The Knicks would have a chance if the Heat were incapable of adjustments.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
Carson, 76ers, Lakers in the finals. That'd be wild.
Dude, that would be sick. What do you got? Okay, Carson, if 76ers and Lakers both make it, what do you got?
I'm thinking this makes me feel like 76ers, Lakers. I don't know if they ever matched up in the finals when it was like Mo Cheeks on those teams and stuff. But it feels to me like a 1970s, 1980s matchup. 76ers. There you go. The MVP and Harden.
Here's the thing. If LeBron makes it to the finals, guys, I don't think he's going to lose it. I just don't. I mean, like, I've seen players will it before. You know, Michael Jordan, like, throwing the guys on the back. Kobe Bryant throwing the guys on the back and just carrying them. And LeBron James, at this age of his life, he's got to be thinking, I've got maybe one or two more runs like this left. And if he makes it to the finals, guys, I mean, we're going to see an epic performance out of LeBron that is going to be so legendary that the fact that he's 38 years old and doing something like that. So that's what I want to see, just because this is the year that he broke the scoring record. I feel like this would be icing on the cake for him. And I hate the Lakers, but as far as iconic moments in the game, what more iconic would it be than one of the greatest players to ever play the game, arguably some of the people say the greatest, take a team that was 7th ranked all the way through a juggernaut of the Western Conference to play and get his, 5th ring?
There you go. Writing stories, bro. Writing the fucking narrative.
Right? Why not, man? Come on. How many more times do we get a chance to see history like this? We got to observe it when we can. Enjoy it while we can and not like be like, oh, that's disgusting.
Did you you sent me something about, and then you started giving me a narrative, and I cut you off when we were pre-gaming this episode. All right. So I'm going to give you a name, and then you tell me the narrative that you were telling me. Alexandre Sarr.
All right, dude.
You want me to I'm glad you brought him Perth up. Wildcats just signed the new NBL Rising Stars. shout out to Sammy Dog. Shout out to everybody who let us know about this. We appreciate you guys. But tell us on Alexandre Stars and the Thunders your opinion about this interesting situation.
So 2 years ago, I was watching Olivia play in the G League, and he did something crazy. And then after the game, somebody asked him a question as well. But during the game, he did something crazy, and the announcer said, man, he's really good. But his brother, who's like 15 at the time, I think he said, or 14 at the time, was like 6'8". And Olivia had made the comment that, watch out, my brother's going to be better than me. Right? And the guy's like, oh, that'd be crazy. And then they asked him after the game, like, you know, I heard your brother's pretty good or whatever. And he's like, yeah, he keeps on developing really strong and whatever it was. But the point is, what I'm saying is, that's the moment that I started being like, okay, Olivia has a brother. And then all of a sudden, Olivia goes and plays for a different team. And I start watching him play. And, you know, he's getting time, but he's just not NBA ready, you know? And I hate being honest like this about some players.
What's up, Blake?
They're just not NBA ready at sometimes. And they're being pushed into a game, and they're like, oh, let's learn on. Anyway, so Olivia Saar kept on coming back and playing for us. And I kept on being like, why? Why is this important that Olivia is playing for us? And then every single time I would ask myself that, I just think about his brother, you know? And then I look up online, see where he was at. What height was he at, you know? And last time I checked, he was like 6'10". But no, he's gotten bigger. He's 7'1 with insane handles, guys. Like, he's getting better and better. And the video that was just sent to Mark and I, it just proves how good his handles are, really. And I just keep on going back to it. Like, did the Oklahoma City Thunder continue to give Olivia these contracts and money to basically keep him close for eventually maybe his brother to play for the Thunder?
Yeah, but I mean, this. What would be the odds? Because, like, okay, now we're not going to. We're not going to get him.
What are the odds? Let's just be honest. Houston's top four protected. Okay. Utah's top seven protected or 10 protected, whatever it is. We've got things that could happen.
You got to be. Here's the thing, the Rising Stars, NBL Rising Stars, right?
Yeah.
LaMelo, he goes at 3, I think, right? You got Giddy goes at 6. Jang goes at 11. So realistically, you need a top 10 pick, top maybe even 5 pick, depending on how good he is, to get him, right? I mean, we're talking like 7-1 unicorn. Of course, that's overused, but still, like,
but what's his age going to be at when he's in the draft? And I think that's why it comes back to developmental and drafting developmental players versus drafting guys that are ready to play right away.
But everybody's going to want him, right? Like, he's
sure, especially because I still don't know much about this draft class coming up in 2024-25, right?
Right.
Or 24, whatever it is. 24 draft. But it's not a coincidence that we have 4 picks in that first round so far.
Yeah.
Like, why do we have that many picks and covered down so deeply there?
Because.
Because Sam saw something in that draft. Why did he trade all the picks that we had, what, last year, pretty much, for
Jang? / J-Dub, whatever.
Why? Because this year, it's because there wasn't people that he was incredibly excited about coming up.
Who would Presti have picked if he could not have gotten both players?
Oh, J-Dub.
Okay.
Without even thinking. Like, okay. I 100% believe in this narrative that Sam Presti recognized that there was 2 or 3 other teams trying to get that Knicks pick, and the Knicks were going to trade out of it. They didn't want anybody there. And he knew that. And he knew that if they traded up, J-Dub was off the board at 11. So he did what he needed to do. He protected J-Dub.
Do what you got to do.
And he got the next best player on his board. And that's why he picked Jang at 11, just in case the Knicks pick fell through. He was covered, and he still had J-Dub on his team.
So he was a little bit like Charles Barkley. He was juggling 2 balls.
You're just juggling 2 balls at the same time.
I didn't actually watch that clip yet, bro.
What's up, Blake? No, Charles Barkley, and by the way, Shaq and Charles Barkley's interactions are just hilarious to me. They really are great. And the way that Charles and Shaq just consistently do weird shit to each other, it's funny. But Charles was talking about juggling two balls at the same time. And, you know, like, I don't think he picked up that he said it right away.
No, he didn't. I don't think
and
so.
And then Shaq just starts laughing and Kenny starts laughing. And then all of a sudden, like, you know, what's his face? Asked him to clarify it.
Ernie.
Yeah. Ernie. Now, what do you do with them again? You know, juggle the two. Anyway, so, but it's just fun, man. Like, so, watching that type of interaction on there is good.
It is good. And last time, you know, it's crazy. We spent, like, last episode, like, maybe a couple minutes talking about J.J. Redick and how much we think he's doing a pretty good job. So, now he was interviewed for the Raptors job. Like, yeah. That news came out after we talked. So, we didn't really talk about that. Kind of gone back and forth, bro. Like, do you think you should take a job like that, or how do you think this works out?
I mean, if we're talking about what our sources are saying,
who's our sources? ESPN.
No. Anyways, I don't think JJ is taking that job, and this is the reason why. If JJ were to take that job, right, man? Let's just be honest. JJ is going to be looking at it and saying, "I'm going to get paid what $7-8 million a year." So he either is so desperate to get back in the game, needing to play in the game, right? Or he's just kind of like looking at it like, I'm okay with getting paid $10 million a year to talk on podcast.
Yeah, I mean, he's just, you know, starting. Like, he like, really could be huge.
And that's my point, is that, I mean, if he looks on the other side of it, right, and looks at the NFL and what they've done for Pat, you know? I mean, Pat's exactly. Making what? 30 40 million a year right now.
Yeah, Pat McAfee puts up, I mean, like, they're saying he's about to walk away from his deal that worth $150 million deal. He's gonna walk away from, because he's gonna get probably like 250, which is like, I
but
think
that's my point.
What's
is that
his name,
why would JJ
Bill Simmons, when he started the Ringer and he sold part of it to half of it to the Spotify, he got like 250,
yep,
something like that. I think, like, yeah, you're right, at this point he's got enough following. If he sticks it out, it's not a whole network like the Ringer, but on a long enough timeline, he'll get somebody.
When you
to
say
pay
long
him.
Enough, he's talking like in the next, like, I think in the next year, he'll end up making well north of $22 million a year.
I bet he could podcasting. Sign a contract for like $100 million in the next few years.
And there's just no reason when you're talking about that type of numbers, and then you're talking about coaching, you know, like, to me, like, why would JJ do that unless the only thing he could think about in his mind is like, I have to get back to the game. I need to get back to the game.
I mean, if he goes, say he leads a team to winning a championship and then he gets back in broadcasting, then he would be one of those guys that has every single thing going for him.
What's up, Clips Productions?
Every single fucking thing.
Yeah.
That would have been an incredible type of story, because, you know, at that point you could demand, you know, $15 million to do sideline broadcasting, $25 million for your podcast. Like, you could, it would be like, but.
Well, sure. And I mean, but that's the thing, though, is that, again, I'm looking at it like this, is that he spent enough years in the NBA, you know?
Mm-hmm.
He just got out of it and he's having a lot of success. He's the man as far as NBA podcasting goes. And I look at this and I would say is that, I've seen over and over again, Patrick Ewing, people of guys that get into coaching after they were players, and it just never works out. And I for me, I don't want to ever look at JJ like that. And I'm afraid that if JJ got into coaching, it would inevitably work like that, because, I mean, it's not that, you know, the Toronto Raptors are going to suck. It's just that they need a lot of work still.
Yeah, you know, it's a 7-year
wouldn't
project.
Be like he's going into a situation where they're competing for a championship right away. And I think that's the key right there.
Yeah. Well, I hope he stays in a spot where we can keep hearing from him. But if he goes up to the sideline, then obviously he's got that competitive fire still. All right, guys, we teased you for long enough. Let's do this. All NBA voting. We got Nikola Jokic on the second team. Embiid makes the first team. He's the MVP, so I guess that's not a surprise, right? Giannis, first team. Tatum, first team. Shea first team, Luka first team. Shea actually ends up with more points than Luka. Just four. He gets 407. But, I mean, seriously, bro, 63 first place points. Now, you mentioned at the beginning there's a little controversy about Steph Curry maybe deserving to be on this. But I think what Shea was able to do leading this team to exceed expectations and then for the Warriors to kind of have a disappointing regular season, I think it's justified. What do you think, bro?
Yeah, I'm just looking at the point total right here while you're talking. I think we have to highlight it because there is a 60-something point difference between Embiid and Shea. 407 and 474. 47? 70 or 67 point. Man, I can't even do math right now, guys. Whatever. You guys understand what I'm saying.
We get it. There's a difference.
But the point is that there's still another spot for Shea to move up here. And I think that's the thing that I'm looking at here is that when you're talking about the three top echelon of players right here, you have Giannis with 500 points. You have Jason Tatum with 484 and Joel Embiid with 474. That's where I want to see Shea next year. That's the numbers I want to see for Shea next year. That's the improvement I would like to see. Now, as far as the first place votes, you got 63. Hell of a job by Shea right there, man. Leading all guards. That's what's crazy about that. And if you add, it's insane to me seeing what Steph Curry did this year and the fact that Donovan Mitchell did some great things, and yet they're not even close to the point total that Shea is. So Shea just dominated almost by 20 points. Or 60 points by those guys. So hell of a job. I think it's just one of those things where, again, I want to see another 60-point jump because that just means that the respect level for Shea is growing, and I think that's key for this Oklahoma City Thunder.
You know, this reminds me a lot of, like, when Russ first broke into the All-Star game. Hmm. I remember looking at the list of point guards, and I was like, how long will it take for a player like Russ to do it? And it was like, it didn't take him very long, but when you looked at the quality of point guard, like, it was like Darren Williams, Chris Paul, like, and these guys were like, I don't know, Darren Williams didn't end up with the same career as Chris Paul, but when they were, like, both in their prime, there was a lot of debate about who was better. Sure. And how was Russ going to break through that, you know, especially when you added Steph Curry to that group, and it was like all these point guards that were really elite. And here we are. If you look at these guards, you know, like, these are not young players. I mean, these are not old players, you know.
What I was about to say. Six players are listed as guards here. Mm-hmm. All right? You've got six guards. You got Damian Lillard at the third team, DeAndre Fox, third team. You've got Steph Curry, second team, Donovan Mitchell, second team, Luka and Shea in the first team. Why am I bringing this up? Because there's six guards, four of which are under 25 years old. Mm-hmm. Guys, think about that. I think Donovan Mitchell's 25. He might be 26. But
Shea received the most votes for any guard.
It's insane, guys. This is what we're talking about. And this is huge.
Look, I get, like, right now when you look at it, the top forward getters are two forwards and a setter. But this league, you can tell as it goes on, is going to continue to be dominated by guards. There's nothing more exciting than a player like Shea or even like Donovan Mitchell. And Donovan Mitchell to have the season he had, for Damian Lillard to have the season he had, and Shea to be voted higher than him, like, I get.
And Luka, man. Luka had a stellar season.
Yeah, people treated us like we were fucking crazy. Let's
just be honest. Luka now taking his team to the playoffs cost him the number one vote for guards. Because it's only a four-point difference. There's no way that 4 points – is it a four-point – I'm sorry.
You're right. I can't see very
close. It's one first-place vote, you know? There's no way that, you know, one place vote wasn't turned on that decision. So, again, it goes back to giving a shit until the last buzzer goes. And you saw this team give it at all. And that's why, again, we're getting rewarded on every single opportunity. Second place vote for this, second place vote for this, top five for MVP, most, you know, right up there for most improved. And now we're seeing Shea being an all-NBA team, which you and I, we're the only people as far as the podcasters in Oklahoma City that were able to sit down and say, we think that Shea could be, you know, top 10 in MVP voting this year and first all NBA team. Now, I covered myself at the end of that saying, most likely he'll be the second team All-NBA because I didn't feel like he could be the first this year because of, you know, all the guards that we were seeing play. But I was wrong. And I want to say you're the one that said, no, this is the year that Shai is going to get first All-NBA team. So kudos to you for sticking with what you're saying. And
you got to bust down the door. You can't wait for your turn. You know what I mean? And yeah. I felt like this was a chance. But one thing that I want to kind of note is what he did after the All-Star game was pretty incredible because he came into the All-Star game and he wasn't a starter in the West or, you know, for his team. I think it was apparent that he had earned that starting position, but he didn't get it. Name recognition, whatever. To earn first team All-NBA means that was a mistake. You know what I mean? You don't get first team All-NBA and not be a starter in your conference.
I know.
That's maybe it wasn't just a mistake, but he also put on a show like what he did. And I feel like we're a little bit removed from it. It's been a little while.
But this is the respect, though. Your top five MVP voting, you're going into it first team All-NBA, and then people are going to say Shai's going to the free throw too much next year. Well, he earned it now. Motherfuckers, he earned it.
Earned it. I think he's going to benefit from this team getting more experience. We're going to get a better record next year. But say we win 45 games. He doesn't automatically get first team All-NBA.
Because if we only win 45 games, we're going to have a hard time getting into the playoffs still. I think,
right, exactly. Like, the reason he got it, I think, was a lot because of the exceeding expectations. We need to get 50 wins if we want him to continue to maintain that position.
That's it.
So that's what we're looking for from this team is a continued progression. But we don't want to, like, get, like, a little bit better. A lot of people are like, maybe we'll get 43, 45. Like, I get it. Like, we could. But, like, we want to see this be the year we jump into 50 wins. And we see Paycom really rocking all season long. It was tough, man. It was tough watching them have trouble filling it out. But by the end of the season, the players really started getting a sense for what can happen when it's at its best.
That's it, man. And it's fun. I mean, that's all I can say about that is when this team's clicking, when everything is working well, we're watching a very well-oiled machine, as they say, you know? And I don't know. Just like with every fuck doll, there's a lot of holes to fuck. And I think this team covers a lot of different ways, bro.
Remember when we were kids and we went to church when the Knicks were playing in the finals?
I love this, bro. I love how I say fuck doll and you come back when we were kids going to church.
Yeah. And I think the Knicks were in the finals. They were playing against the Rockets. And we were like in choir. And they were like, we were up there. And our dad decided to skip church to watch the game. And then we were like so pissed because we couldn't watch the game. And he came in and like, I guess the game was over by the time like he arrived. Because he was just like, I still remember him shaking his head from the back of the auditorium. And we were just like we became the most depressed people in choir because we just found out the Knicks had lost. My God, dude.
Not a fun time when your team loses like that and your dad has to come into the church telling you the bad news.
Bad news. But hey, I'm happy for the Thunder because I feel like Sam Presti's quest to make sure that when the Thunder arrived back in the playoffs, it was an arrival, not an appearance.
I love it.
And then you see what Shai's doing. And then there's still more. Like Dort gets the disrespect by not getting his All-NBA defense.
I want to throw this out here before we have to head out here, but when I said the other day that DeAndre Ayton would be the person that I would pick for the person to pick up on this offseason, and then the Bleacher Report comes out with article that... I was like, what the Oklahoma City Thunder need the most, and it was DeAndre Ayton.
Yeah.
They said, you know, not exactly what I was saying, but that the price for DeAndre is going to be much cheaper than it used to be, and I think... That's what the Thunder, if they're looking at adding a veteran or something like that, yes, it's a $30 million, but it covers the cap space that we have available. And the other thing it does that it will allow this team to do is it allows this team to stay together because when DeAndre Ayton in 2 years, we have to have a contract that's tradable.
Mm-hmm.
Guess who's going to be the most tradable contract in the NBA at that point? DeAndre Ayton's. Because we're going to up his value. We're going to make him so valuable. And by then, we'll have Chet, Poku, and everybody else ready to go. Now, I'm not saying this is what's going to happen, but it was just kind of cool that Bleacher Report kind of echoed what I was thinking.
Well, we'll see what happens, but I do think there's a chance. The Suns have to figure something out, and I don't think
Eclipse,
they're
going to. Agree. Veteran player. I mean, we're always looking for a veteran player on this team.
Right. So, we will see. We will see. We appreciate everybody joining us. Tomorrow's going to be a tough day for me, but I think we'll be able to work it out, bro.
If we can't, we can't. It's Friday, bro. I have this weekend. My wife is heading out of town, so I will be available anytime this weekend.
All right. So we'll see if we can pull it off, guys. We hope that you join us. If not, that's cool. Enjoy your weekend.
We appreciate you guys.
Love you, and we will see you soon.